Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 12th of April 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Your readers today are Frieda Bates.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Boost for Future of City A&E Unit, Protest over Changes at Hospital School, and Boomtown Plan Set to be Rebuffed. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Frieda?
Yes. Boost for Future of City A&E Unit. Plans to improve the A&E unit in Winchester have been unveiled. Health bosses have confirmed they are looking at improving the department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The news comes after concerns over the future of the A&E in the city were raised in 2017. When plans for a new £150 million critical treatment hospital near Junction 7 of the M3 were shelved in favour of alternative centralisation proposals. But now, new investments in the A&E have been confirmed in a bid to improve the services to meet local needs. The plans are at very early stage and were mentioned at a meeting of the Health and Adult Social Care Select Committee held at Hampshire County Council last week. During the meeting, Winchester City Council Councillor Jan Warwick asked health bosses if there were plans for an urgent treatment centre in the city, as a similar facility is set to open in Andover. But health bosses said that plans for Winchester would be about redesigning the A&E. Following the meeting, Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospital, said, "The pressure on healthcare services, particularly A&E, is ever increasing. A collaboration of local healthcare providers has come together and includes commissioners, Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, community and mental health partners, GPs in primary care, adult social services, and the ambulance service to focus on this issue. The thinking is at the very earliest stages, but at its heart is a commitment to the emergency department at Winchester and improving and developing the service to meet local needs. The vision is to make sure people get the right care at the right time, in the right place, within and after their hospital care." Mr. Whitfield said other steps are being taken to improve the services in the city and include a new rapid assessment and treatment unit and paediatric assessment units. The RAT, Rapid Assessment and Treatment Unit, came into operation at the beginning of April and provides a designated area for the emergency department team to take rapid handover from ambulances and begin initial assessments and treatments for patients. Meanwhile, the PAU, Paediatric Assessment Unit, is said to be completed over the coming weeks. The paediatric assessment units are part of the improvement works to ensure younger patients are cared for in a purpose-built area, away from older patients in the department, Ms. Whitfield said. She added, "The unit in Basingstoke, which has been operational since the end of January, is already proving to support the emergency department and paediatric staff in delivering high-quality care to patients." The news of the further improvements to the A&E was welcomed by City Council leader Caroline Horrell.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Protest over changes at Hospital School. Protests were held outside the Hampshire County Council offices in Winchester over, quote, potential changes to an adolescent psychiatric unit. A recent internal consultation could lead to 13 teachers at Lee House Hospital being replaced with, quote, unqualified tutors to save money, according to protest organiser Johanna Keeler. These claims have since been denied by the council. Johanna grew up locally and is an ex-patient of the hospital in Aylesford Road, which provides treatment for people aged between 12 and 18. She was admitted in the build-up to her GCSEs and could not attend her secondary school, Henry Beaufort, and so was taught in the hospital's education unit. Johanna said, "I can't understand why they're looking to change the unit. It's wonderful. The teachers there should be rewarded. It should be used as an exemplar facility for others to copy and take advice from. But instead, it's become a financial concern, and that's all the council can see." She continued, "I took my exams after being taught by the teachers there, and the support I had was phenomenal. Why change something that works perfectly? I couldn't be where I am now, studying at Exeter University, without these people." But Steve Crocker, Director of Children's Services at the council, claims that the consultation is only looking to change current staff's contracts of employment. He said, "We have not proposed at any point to withdraw the education provision at Lee House or to reduce what's currently offered. This includes supporting young people to follow their school curriculum and continued access to GCSE and A-level programmes." He continued, "Our objective is to determine how we best invest in these services, not to reduce them. We're working with those individuals and their representative bodies to explore all options to mitigate the impact and transition to the new model, which we believe will better support an all-year curriculum offer." He added, "We are committed to both maintaining and extending the education opportunities for vulnerable young people." In the hospital's most recent Care Quality Commission examination, the education department was reported to be, quote, "boasting outstanding outcomes for the young people using its education provision." The protest on Friday was attended by teachers from both the unit and her old school. One teacher from Lee House, who wishes to remain anonymous, said, "With all due respect, the tutors that they are proposing to replace us with will have minimal qualifications, and it's unlikely they'll be able to provide suitable learning. Our department mustn't be downgraded. It's all about teaching like a mainstream school and helping those in need get on with their education." Miriam Colley, a drama teacher at Henry Beaufort, who also helped students at the school, said, "I'm here at the protest because young people with severe mental health issues need to have bedrock security in their education. By maintaining the unit at Lee House, education will not be an issue for these local youths." An online petition has been created on change.org, which currently has more than 2,600 signatures. Results from the consultation will be released in the coming weeks. And that's accompanied by a photograph of some very serious and determined-looking people standing outside the Lee House facility.
Boomtown plan set to be rebuffed. The host of the Boomtown Festival looks set to be rebuffed in his plans to get permanent planning permission for the event. Peveril Bruce wants approval for the festival and the Tough Mudder events on the Matterley estate that he farms near Winchester. Up until now, the festival, which started in 2011, has only had temporary approvals, with the current one due to expire this December. Campaigners see it as a last chance to halt the growth of Boomtown, which last year had a licence for 65,000 people. Planners at the South Downs National Park are to consider the application at its meeting in Midhurst, West Sussex, this week. A report is recommending that permanent permission be withheld. and that a temporary approval for the next 6 years be approved. However, the members of the committee do not have to accept the recommendations of their officers. Boomtown currently has permission for up to 65,000 people on site for the event held every August. The application was highly controversial, with 53 letters of objection. Parish councils objecting were Beowulf, Bishop Sutton, Tichborne, Bramdean and Hinton Ampner, Cheriton and Itchen Valley. Campaigners claim that the festival site, including performance, parking and camping areas, is now larger than the town of Petersfield. The Campaign to Protect Rural England also objected. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury, in a letter, said there is no doubt about the heavy impact of the event, although he did not officially object. But local MP Steve Brine, who lives in nearby Easton, wrote in support of the event. There were 126 letters of support, mostly from people living outside the area. Many pointed out the economic boost for local shops and pubs. This year's festival is set to run between August the 7th and August the 12th. Headliners include American rapper Ms. Lauryn Hill, rap rock band Prophets of Rage, alternative hip-hop artists The Streets, and punk rock duo Slaves. The venue will be themed as a pop-up town, split into multiple districts, with a variety of musicians and other entertainers performing across 100 stages.
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Barnes, Lillian Floria Winifred Barnes, peacefully aged 103. Foote, Rosemary Foote, following a dignified and courageous battle against illness, aged 81. Holmes, Mary Frances Holmes. Horn, David Edward Horn, following a short illness, aged 82. Raymond, Donald William Raymond, peacefully at Brendan Care, Winchester. And Ventura, Valerie Ventura, at Southampton General Hospital. Christian comment this week is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And it's headed Beautiful Feet. I have been writing Christian comments for many years now and have always tried to find something that would be of interest to Christians and non-Christians alike, as instructed by the late Canon Keith Walker when I first started, but I have never before written about feet. On Sunday morning, I preached at Whitchurch Methodist Church using the story of Mary anointing and wiping with her hair the feet of Jesus at Bethany. Little did they know that as I spoke, my own foot was throbbing with pain and I had anointed it with arnica cream before setting off. I was tempted to change my introduction and tell them about it. I had badly stubbed my foot on a door jamb after tripping on a dog bone left on the floor whilst not wearing shoes. There are many references to foot washing and also to beautiful feet in the Bible. In fact, foot washing started off as a social ritual in the history of the dry countries, particularly of the Near and Far East, and was practiced by both the Greeks and the Romans. People wore sandals, and of course the roads were hot and dusty. It was a sign of hospitality to have the feet of guests washed, and also customary for everyone to have their feet washed in the evenings. Sometimes this was done by wives for their husbands, but usually by servants or slaves. Indeed, it was usually done by the lowest ranking of these. The references to beautiful feet occur first in the Old Testament, particularly in Isaiah, and then these are referred to in the New Testament. In ancient times, messengers were sent to the king and to major cities to bring news about battles or attacks from other nations. The messengers often ran a long way, and their feet got dirty and bloody. But when the message was good news, those bleeding and tortured feet were considered beautiful. Jesus washed the feet of the disciples on Maundy Thursday at the Last Supper, taking on the role of a servant. His last commandment or mandate to the disciples was that they should do likewise. This ceremony is traditionally performed on the night before Good Friday. Interestingly, its practice has varied throughout history, with much theological discussion being held over its significance. For a long time, it was principally done in the Roman Catholic tradition, but is now regularly done by most Christian denominations. Other faiths carry out ritual foot washing before prayer as an act of self-cleansing. Today, some charities for the homeless offer foot washing and clean socks as a service to those who live on the streets. By their actions, symbolising that their feet are also beautiful and that they are loved by God, as Jesus commanded his followers to do. And I'm sorry, I don't have the name of the person who has written that. It's been cut off my little bit of copy.
Moving on to letters to the editor, the first letter's read by John. Thank you, John.
Yes, and here's a letter from Andrew Rutter about roads around Winchester. The letter is headed New Bypass. Sir, I am disappointed to learn from your report in the Hampshire Chronicle of the City Council's consideration of the County Council's proposed movement strategy following its second consultation. They do not appear to have listened to new representations, and the County Council don't get the opportunity to fund this sort of comprehensive study very often. So, they need to be bolder in setting out the city's long-term strategy, even if they feel that their initial application for government funds has to be fairly modest at this point in time. One reason for this is to ensure that planning applications in the interim are not approved, and that would frustrate long-term proposals. If, as I've always thought, the county is supporting a public desire to severely reduce traffic passing through the central area, they have got to create alternative routes to get to outside destinations, as well as to increase park and ride for people coming into the centre, either to work or shop or as visitors. And this is where the Western and Northern bypass becomes essential. The case has also been made for increasing industrial traffic coming up the M3 bound for the A34 in the Midlands, which is frequently held up by any accident and is diverted around Winchester. When such a road framework is in place, it would make possible the use of frequent buses and taxis to cater for the majority of trips by day between different residential areas through the central area. I also wonder whether the case is being made strongly enough for expenditure on bridges for new dedicated pedestrian and cycleways to be created, given the fact that people have demonstrated their willingness to use these, despite the present patchy provision. The proximity of the National M3 route has introduced a rigidity into transport planning for Winchester City. Surely, making it a special case for funding pedestrian and cycleways will be made all the more important when we need to consider the effect of climate change. And Andrew Rutter lives in St John's Road in Winchester.
My letter is headed Still the MP, and it comes from Karen Barrett of Byron Avenue, Full Flood. Sir, there seems to be some confusion among your interviewees about the resignation of Steve Brine. He has only resigned as a minister, not as the Winchester constituency MP. He is still gainfully employed, able to have his say as a backbencher and vote on any meaningful motions put before the House. I disagree with the notion that he now has no real voice, as he has certainly raised his media profile by resigning. When assessing any MP, however, it's best not to rely exclusively on their press releases and photo ops. Go to the Parliament UK website and click on Spoken Contributions, written statements and voting records. It's far more illuminating. From Karen Barrett.
And here's another letter on the subject of the bypass, and it comes from Ian Holmes. Sir, I was greatly saddened, but not totally surprised, to read your relevant article in the March 28th edition regarding the City Councillor's decision not to build a bypass. To me, this now suggests that Winchester will not be properly prepared for the future. This is a decision which I am quite sure those councillors will live to regret, and that your From the Files in 25 years' time will confirm. I fully support David Cox from South Wanston with his recommendation that now is the time to be bold. We have been warned on several occasions, and by different but relevant agencies, that the likely volume of traffic, as well as its likely size and weight, will continue to increase, as it clearly has done over the last 25 years, and that Junction 9 on the M3 will simply not be able to cope, even with its redesign, and it cannot now. A bypass would remove much of that traffic from Junction 9, particularly that heading for the Midlands and the North, thus making that driving experience both safer and easier. London has the M25 around it. Other cities, something similar. And thus car, lorry journeys are much easier and quicker than before. Ironically, I am putting this note together on the morning of major problems on the M3 northbound due to a breakdown. Where will some of that traffic inevitably go in order to reach its destination? Through Winchester city centre. Some of the plans which the Winchester Movement strategy have sanctioned are fine for the city centre, but again, the big picture has been bypassed. And that's from Ian Holmes of Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
Green boost. Sir, contrary to the Conservative MP Jacob Rees-Mogg's suggestion that participation in the European elections would result in the election of the likes of Tommy Robinson and UKIP, it's more likely that it would benefit the Greens. In England, voting for the European Parliament is the closest electors have to a poll by proportional representation. It's a huge opportunity for electors in England, and also those in the rest of the UK, to have a rehearsal for the next British general election. Electors who'd like to vote Green but never do so because they think they won't stand a chance under the first-past-the-post electoral system have their chance here. If all potential Green electors, mindful of climate and ecological concerns, which appear to be widespread outside of Westminster, and the poor recent performance of Conservative and Labour MPs voted Green at the European elections, it would give the country an indication of how much support the Greens really currently have. A good showing at the European elections would convince many people that the election of more Green MPs is a realistic proposition at a general election under the first-past-the-post system. And that letter comes from Jeff Naylor, who lives in Birch Close in Colton Common.
This letter has no headline, so you must work it out for yourselves. Sir, I saw in your March 28th edition that yet again, public consultation on the movement strategy was a waste of our time and the council's money. OK, we need more park and ride car parks, but all buses need to be improved to discourage car use in Winchester. However, installing a bus gate on Southgate Street won't help anyone. Where is it to be? Preventing drivers getting to Hotel du Vin, the cinema, or even Lyons Hall? The result is that to get to these or the library, anyone south of the city will have to go further round and then use the one-way system, adding to pollution and congestion. And does the bus gate only apply on entering the city and at all hours of the day? As for the change to Eastgate stroke Union Street to allow drivers from Bar End to access Winnall without using the one-way system, there is already a good alternative. Up Mourne Hill from the Chesil Restaurant roundabout, along Winnall Manor Road, then right up Eastern Lane. This avoids the narrow part at the lower end and, if signposted, would avoid the planned disruption and expense. All this I put in my comments on the strategy document, evidently dismissed out of hand. The City of Winchester Trust has already highlighted the need for a western bypass. By dismissing it, councillors have just stored up trouble, i.e. gridlock when the M3 is closed, and avoiding traffic already using city roads unnecessarily. It will have to be built eventually, at greater expense and inconvenience. And this letter comes from Elizabeth Thorne, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
Now a letter headed Walking Away, and it comes from David Wolfe. Sir, a quick comment, if I may, in response to Rupert Pitt's letter Disturbing, published in the Hampshire Chronicle, April the 4th. I couldn't agree more with his parallel between the Brexit negotiations and buying a house. Just because you decide to move, you don't then do so at any cost or to an unsuitable property for your needs, nor if the survey reveals serious deficiencies. And again, I agree. Just as with Brexit, you walk away if it doesn't suit. But if you can't find the right house, you don't move. Or, in the case of Brexit, you remain in the EU. And that comes from David Wolfe, Lark Hill Rise, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Here's a brief contribution to local housing issues from Simon Lever. It's headed Positive Plans. Sir, new council homes and affordable housing is a worthy initiative that Winchester City Council has been committed to developing, as reported in your edition of April the 4th. The Victoria Court block of 18 flats address a much needed requirement for not only affordable housing, but those who require ease of access. Plans to build over 1,000 new homes is a most welcome and positive initiative. To see our Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, officially opening the Victoria Court flats endorses the importance of such projects. And Simon lives in Juniper Close on Badger Farm.
The headline for this letter from David Abbott of Bridge Lane, Shawford, is Go World Trade Organisation. Sir, the lorry park built to handle possible transport delays after Brexit, mentioned in the Chronicle on April the 4th, is a pragmatic response to real concerns, a modest price to pay for freedom, and evidence of a great national story. A quote from the Daily Telegraph of April the 5th, Britain is officially ready for no deal Brexit. The French have nearly completed an amazing transformation at Calais, Boulogne and Eurotunnel. Both France and the UK have demonstrated how ready both countries are for the UK to leave without a deal. Plans have been made for goods crossing the Irish border too. Our civil servants have moved mountains. Is the Prime Minister the last to know? In order to push her very bad withdrawal agreement, the PM and her Remain ministers and the MPs continue to harp on catastrophe if we leave without a deal. But we are leaving without a deal, at least a trade deal. The withdrawal agreement doesn't give us a trade deal. The trade deal is supposed to be negotiated after we stumble into the prison of the withdrawal agreement or into Jeremy Corbyn's customs union, which will push up prices for the poor and prohibit us from striking trade deals with the rest of the world. If we leave with no deal, we will have a World Trade Organization deal like most countries. Let's step clear of all the obstructions put in the way of a clean exit and go WTO, that stands for World Trade Organization, from David Abbott, Shawford.
And now a very short, tongue-in-the-cheek letter, and it's headed Slow Progress. Sir, I read a manuscript in Hampshire Record Office where King Alfred had complained at the length of time that the contractors Durkin were taking over the roadworks in Jury Street. And that comes from Raymond Marsh, Courtney Road, Abbott Spartan, Winchester. I think we might all agree with that.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Looking back, we begin with news from 200 years ago. Thank you, John.
Yes, and here's a cautionary tale from the edition of the Hampshire Chronicle dated Monday, April the 12th, 1819. On the 20th of last month, a warrant was issued by Mr. Shebbear to the minister and parish officers of Great Worldham, directing them to take up the body of Francis Stevens, who died from drinking nearly a gallon of beer in about a quarter of an hour in the rising sun in the parish of Ropley on the Sunday week preceding, which he had undertaken to do in a given time, on condition of some other men who were present paying for it.
100 years ago, this extract comes from Saturday, April the 12th, 1919. The first of a series of lectures to be given by Mr. C.E. Robinson, B.A., to the members of the Winchester Workers' Educational Association was delivered at the Congregational Hall, Winchester, on Thursday, the subject being socialism. The lecture, in opening his remarks, said that the first ideal of socialism was the brotherhood of man, but that was not seriously brought forward as a political idea until the French Revolution, when the leaders of that movement adopted the motto Liberty, Equality and Fraternity. The second piece is about Prize Day at Perrin's School, Oresford, which was held on Thursday, but the programme was not of the usual elaborate character. Due to the fact that the recent closing of the school, owing to the prevailing influenza epidemic, had somewhat disturbed arrangements. The ceremony of handing the prizes to the successful students was performed by Mr. J. Ridley Shield, chairman of the governors, with Mrs. Shield by his side.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, April the 12th, 1969. Following the announcement by Mr. R. E. Chisnell of the withdrawal of the King Alfred bus services between Fisher's Pond and Winchester from tomorrow, Sunday, there has been a great deal of activity to find transport for those coming to and from Winchester. Mr. John Sullivan of Twyford has mounted a campaign to save the service by writing to the Winchester City and Rural District Councils, the MP and the Minister of Transport. Yesterday, Friday, the Hants and Dorset Motor Services issued details of their steps to meet the difficulties on their two services, the 48 from Southampton and 69 from Fareham, from Fisher's Pond to Winchester. During this week, Mr. Sullivan has made surveys of those travelling into Winchester between 8 and 9 o'clock, which he claims prove conclusively there was enough traffic for 3 double-decker buses. And the second item, the residents of Ozzlebury, that quiet country village which nestles between the Petersfield and Bishop's Waltham roads out of Winchester, are fed up to the teeth with chickens. But the chickens themselves are not much in evidence. The reason is that they are only thick on the ground within the confines of what some people see as one of the greatest leaps forward in modern farming, the intensive production poultry house. At present, there are 5 pairs of chicken houses in Oslebury, each house containing about 8,000 chicks, squeaking, yellow and fluffy. But with another 2 in the process of being built, and a planning application for at least another pair, local opinion has ceased to view them as necessary agricultural developments. In the wake of the latest planning applications, there was a wave of local criticism of the continued expansion of the poultry industry in the village, and a petition was signed by over 100 local residents.
And here we are at the edition dated April the 8th, 1994, 25 years ago. 2 pieces here. Gerry Malone, MP, has written a strongly worded attack on the, quote, weak proposals to close Winchester Magistrates' Court. With the Hampshire Magistrates' Court Committee due to consider the response to the closure consultation exercise at its meeting next Monday, the Winchester and Orton MP has slated the logic behind the cost-cutting proposal. He criticised the committee's reliance on a survey which suggested that most defendants tried in Winchester didn't mind which court they attended, noting that 70% of such defendants come from outside the Winchester area. He said, "I'm not surprised they didn't much mind whether they travelled to Winchester or Basingstoke. I hope the committee will not place much reliance on this line of argument, which is simply weak." He stressed that the views of the 30% of defendants who do live in the Winchester area should be the paramount consideration in this respect. And here's the second piece, in which case parking is discussed, not for the first or last time. Winchester City residents are furious at a £225 ransom exacted by the City Council for the simple privilege of being able to park on their own property. 13 residents in the North Walls area are protesting over the fee imposed on them for driving through the City Council-owned St Peter's car park to reach their own back gardens. Jane Bacciarelli of Trinity Terrace, North Walls, has hit out at what she calls the bullying and blackmail tactics of the council, which has presented the £225 yearly charge to the residents as a take-it-or-leave-it option. The residents, who have no on-street parking outside their own houses, have lobbied the City Council over the last month against such an unjustified bill. But 4 of them have had their charges more than doubled for their pains. Part of the residents' bewilderment included why some of them had received new bills for £225 and others a £100 for driving over the same City Council land. In response, the City Council has this week conceded that this represents what they call an anomaly, and are now charging all the protesters at the higher rate of £225.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Frieda and will be followed by First Person, read by John.
The editorial comment is headed A&E Plans Providing a Welcome Lifeline. Today's news of improvements to the A&E unit at Winchester Hospital will be welcomed by many, as it appears to allay any fears over the future of the department. The plans put to bed many months of speculation, sparked by a move to centralise hospital services in North and Mid-Hampshire. Regular Chronicle readers will remember bosses who run Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital refusing to confirm the future of the A&E in December, as the Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust looked to centralise services. Originally, plans had been floated for a £150 million critical treatment unit off Junction 7 of the M3, but were shelved as they were deemed unaffordable. Although the new plans for investment in the RHCH are at an early stage, the fact bosses are considering pumping money into the department will provide welcome relief for those campaigners who feared the serious threat of the A&E unit closing, resulting in longer journeys for what could be life and death situations.
And now first person, and it's George Hayter's turn to entertain us this week with a piece titled Help to Bring English Home. Living in Amsterdam temporarily, I have been impressed by the number of museums. So far, I've counted 23. That includes 4 major art museums, an impressive maritime collection, and a mighty new science museum. There's a museum of canals, and the Dutch capital also boasts a museum of bags and purses, and even one for pipes. Being Amsterdam, unsurprisingly, there lurks a controversial cannabis museum too. Considering its modest size, Winchester seems to be keeping up with Amsterdam. I calculate that the Hampshire capital has at least 8 museums, largely thanks to our regimental connections, but 8 still leaves plenty of room for more. An exciting idea for a new Winchester museum has been around for years, and now my hopes are high that a place may be found for it. This intriguing plan, championed by a dogged group called the English Project, is for Winchester to be home to a museum of the English language. The English Project is seeking cash to realise this technically ambitious idea and would like to occupy a former warehouse known as Wool Staplers Hall. This handsome Victorian 4-storey building next to the bus station forms part of the Saxon Gate redevelopment. But why here? Well, the rationale for this unique museum scheme, and this is humbling for those of us who know and love Winchester, is that the English language probably started here. Born in our town, English, the language that has swept the world, the de facto international language, the global medium for everything from business to air traffic control, uniting humanity from the EU to the UN, is thought to have crystallised here over 1100 years ago, when King Alfred insisted that his priests translate posh Latin into common English. And English is spreading fast. It's already mother tongue to 5% of the world's population, and is second language to a further 8%. With the increasing influence of China, some say Mandarin would yet snatch international dominance. Mandarin native speakers account for a hefty 12% of the world population. However, the crucial proportion of world population taking up Mandarin as a second language totals only 2% or so. The complexity of Chinese writing looks set to continue hampering its expansion. Although English's lead looks permanent, history cautions us. French was once seen as the world language because of its prestige and its monopoly of diplomacy, and yet French now claims only a 3% slice of the pie. Similarly, all-conquering Latin once unified most of the Western world, but we all know what happened to Latin. But such reservations are for the long term. The next decades look sure to see a rise in Winchester visitors who speak English and who are therefore likely customers for a museum explaining English's evolution. Thankfully, the English Project seems determined to avoid creating a dull museum, saying they plan a dynamic attraction with latest technology used to provide visitors with an interactive experience. Working with sound, they vow to entertain and at the same time as showing English speakers the global variety of English dialects today, visitors will be able to add their own voices to its collection. English emerged from England's Anglo-Saxon era, and the English Project is ready to combine its plans with a Hampshire Cultural Trust suggestion of an Anglo-Saxon museum. It also wants links with language experts at Winchester University. I hope the museum goes ahead in Winchester, because I feel it will put the city on the world cultural map. Back this big idea if you agree. Tell people about the scheme over the next few months. Create a buzz. Play a part in getting the public behind it, so that businesses, councillors and our local MP know that Winchester people want the English Museum.
Belgorum's alternative look at the news this week comprises two items, read by Daphne and Frieda. Thank you, Daphne.
Right, the first one is headed Donation of Dictator's Son's Artwork to Charity. Staff at a Mayor's Hampshire were shocked when a potentially high-value painting by a famous figure was donated at their Bar End base. The painting, which features a bold but divisive illustration of a clown on a bright blue background, is signed by Romano Mussolini, youngest son of Italian dictator Benito Mussolini. When we initially took in the donation, our companions had no idea what they had just been handed. Nigel Samuels, CEO of Emmaus Hampshire, said, "It was only when we took a closer look at the painting that we realised we might have a treasure on our hands." Romano Mussolini was an Italian jazz pianist, film producer and painter. He is particularly well known for his fascination with clowns. They became a common subject of his work after he was initially encouraged to paint by a clown in a circus where he had given a jazz concert. His paintings are in high demand, with some examples selling for hundreds or thousands in Europe and America. The painting donated to Emmaus Hampshire is typical of Mussolini. Emmaus accepts it may be a fake, as paintings by Mussolini are a popular target for forgers. And that's accompanied by a photograph showing a member of staff holding up this painting. It's in a fairly battered frame, but you can certainly see the bright blue background and the stylized picture of the clown. So I think it will be interesting to see what happens.
This input from Belgorum is called Whipping Up a Storm for Shakespeare Play. The artistic director of Winchester's Blue Apple Theatre will be pounding the streets of Paris later this month to support the company in their production of The Tempest. Since signing up for the run last year, Richard Conlon has been in training, clocking up the miles to make sure he finishes in the shadow of the Arc de Triomphe on Sunday. Richard has been working on The Tempest with the cast since the beginning of the year, and thinks they can offer a new take on a classic, which everyone thinks they know. Their approach includes creating some new characters and scenes, imagining some others who were washed up on Prospero's Island and who are now working out what to do next. Should they leave or should they remain? Should they build a wall to keep their land to themselves? This may be a play from over 400 years ago, but Blue Apple are trying to keep things contemporary, which is why this production is being referred to as The Tempest Plus. To donate, visit the Blue Apple Theatre website at www.blueappletheatre.com. And there is a small photograph with Richard Conlon running, arms raised in triumph past some admiring fans.
Now this week's announcements. First of all, a reminder that our AGM is at Littleton Millennium Hall at 2:30 p.m. next Tuesday, the 16th of April. As usual, there'll be afternoon tea, followed by a talk by Chris Davis, from the Band of the Royal Marines. And now to what's on. Here are some events that will be happening in and around Winchester and District in the forthcoming days. On Tuesday the 23rd of April at the Theatre Royal Winchester, there'll be a performance of A Brave Face, a play about what faces the country's veterans returning home from actions abroad. Details and box office are at 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. On Thursday the 25th of April, at 7:30 p.m. in Romsey Town Hall, the Romsey Local History Society hosts a talk by Dr. Andy Russell on prostitution in Victorian Southampton. On Saturday the 27th of April, at 3 p.m. in St. Bartholomew's Church, Hyde, a concert, Songs of Mourning, Songs of Faith and Joy, features mezzo-soprano Emily Gray and guitarist Gerard Cousins. On Sunday the 28th of April, there will be an open day at the Grange Northington between 12:30 and 5 p.m, introducing the Grange Festival of 2019. This will feature live outdoor entertainment and activities for all ages. The Mayor's Choice exhibition in the city space at Winchester Discovery Centre continues until May the 16th, and the excellent National Portrait Gallery BP Portrait Prize exhibition continues in the Discovery Centre until the 26th of June. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 12th of April at 6:17 a.m. and begins at 7:45 p.m. On Wednesday the 17th of April, it ends at 6:06 a.m. and begins at 8:04 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Now we continue with items of general news. And the first item is read by Frieda. Thank you, Frieda.
The heading is Marwell Opens Jurassic Display. And there is a wonderful photograph of colossal green dinosaur behind the bars. I'm glad he's behind the bars. A new exhibition at Marwell Zoo is now open to the public and it is set for a roaring, success. Featuring the biggest Lego dinosaur ever made, Brickosaurs is a collection of lifelike models on display across the 140-acre park. Alongside an 8-metre Tyrannosaurus Rex, guests can visit up to 36 different sculptures. Sean Manny, commercial director at Marwell Zoo, said, "It has been 2 years in the planning and it's fantastic to see it all finally come to fruition. It's a genuine world first at Marwell Zoo and the must-see family day out for 2019. Bright Bricks, the builders and creators behind the exhibition, spent around 969 days using more than 2 million bricks to complete it. Ed Diamond, creative director, said, "We have never attempted anything on this scale before. Now they are in place around Marwell Zoo, they look even more spectacular."
Mayor hails the unsung heroes. A man who has raised thousands of pounds for Parkinson's and cancer charities, and a woman who does the shopping for sick neighbours, were among the residents recognised at the annual Mayor of Winchester's Community Awards. Now in its 11th year, the annual celebration was held at Winchester Science Centre and was attended by more than 200 people. Among those to be recognised for their community work in Winchester was Dan Conroy, who has turned his passion for running into significant funds for multiple charities. Last year, Dan completed the 50-mile Race to the King. Speaking after the ceremony, Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson said, "These awards celebrate those who go above and beyond to undertake tremendous work across the whole district on behalf of their fellow citizens. It's this selfless activity that improves the lives of many residents and makes Winchester such a wonderful place in which to live."
Commemorating 1644 Civil War clash. A battle in the English Civil War has been remembered on a Hampshire field. The reenactors were in Cheriton to mark the 375th anniversary of the encounter between forces of the King Charles I and Parliament in March 1644. Lord Hopton's Regiment of Foot and members of the English Civil War Society marched through the village on their way to the battlefield. At the memorial stone, the reenactment group laid a wreath, and the Bishop of Basingstoke, the Right Reverend David Williams, led a short service. Jonathan Burden of the regiment said, "It is known that Hopton's regiment itself fought in the battle. I'm sure they would be proud to know they have not been forgotten. We also remember the young men from Cheriton who died during both world wars by laying a wreath at the village memorial. Hopton's regiment is looking for new members. Contact lord.hoptons@gmail.com, and it's accompanied by several pictures of the reenactors in their wonderful uniforms, very accurately done. They're carrying very tall lances that are standing upright with, I think, pikes over their shoulders, and one or two of them seem to have an early form of gun or rifle. It looks very colourful."
HGV crash delays. Two major roads were closed on Tuesday after two heavy goods vehicles collided. The incident happened on the A34 slip road near Winnell Roundabout at junction 9 of the M3. All now northbound lanes of both roads were shut due to a fuel spillage caused by the crash. The closure was in place for nearly 2 hours, and motorists trying to get into Winchester and Winnell diverted into the city. Heavy traffic tailed back along Eastern Lane, but was quickly moving again after diversions were put in place by traffic officers.
For the local council elections, the names of candidates battling it out in a key Winchester City Council election on May the 2nd have been revealed. The City Council is poised on a political knife edge with 33 Conservatives and 32 Lib Dems. The Tories are defending 10 seats on this occasion and Lib Dems 6. Two councillors have stood down, Richard Izard in Golden Common and Patricia Stallard in Denmead. And there is a great big huge list of all the candidates and seats there, but I'm not going to bore you by going through them.
Gallipoli Heroes Medals acquired by museum. The Gurkha Museum in Winchester has been gifted the medals and some personal papers of a Great War officer. Colonel Cecil John Lyons Allenson, CMG, CIE, DSO, served with the 6th Gurkha Rifles in the 1914-18 war. And thanks to the generosity, the 6th Queen Elizabeth's Own Gurkha Rifles Regimental Association and Trust, the artefacts have been donated to the museum at Peninsula Barracks. Major Allenson commanded 1/6 Gurkha rifles at Gallipoli in 1915, where they gained fame for the action at Sarry Bear. They were the only troops in the whole campaign to reach and hold the crest line and look down on the straits, which was the ultimate objective. Allenson himself was severely wounded, as was every British officer in the 1/6 GR who had not been killed. President of the 6GR Association, Brigadier J.A. Anderson, said, "It is vital that the history of all our regiments is preserved for posterity, and it is the very least we can do to honour all those who made so many sacrifices for this country. The Gurkha Museum, as the repository for our legacy, is the right place for this and merits the support of all." Martin Brooks, chairman of the museum, said, "We are extremely grateful to the 6th Gurkha Regimental Association for securing these fine medals for us to share with the public as part of the wider collection of the Brigade of Gurkhas held at the Gurkha Museum. This follows on from their assistance in the purchase of the medals of Major General Punch Cowan, MC, commander of 17 Gurkha Division, during the Burma campaign of World War II. And that's accompanied by a picture of the medals with their colourful ribbons and a small artist's impression of the regiment at Sari Bair in Gallipoli.
Radio station expands its operations from the hospital. A radio station has celebrated being broadcast across Winchester for the first time. Winchester Radio, 94.7 FM and online, has now expanded its service beyond the hospital, with the hope of reaching older people in the community. Previously, the station had only been available to patients at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. But those behind the station say, in shifting the emphasis to the wider population, it hopes to promote positive ageing, helping to prevent or slow down some of the issues leading to hospitalisation. The station is run by volunteers, who broadcast music, quizzes, news and features, specifically aimed at those aged 50 and over who live in and around Winchester. The first live programme was broadcast by Steve Randall, with a live link to a party of volunteers and invited special guests gathered at the nearby University of Winchester's Business School. Alongside the charity's volunteers, guests included the mayor, members of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, donors and representatives from the health, business and voluntary sections. Winchester Radio's chairman, Anna O'Brien, said, "It is incredibly exciting for the whole team to be bringing truly local radio to the wider community, alongside our existing hospital audience." Since being awarded the community radio licence by Ofcom, thousands of hours of volunteer effort over the last 3 years have got us here. And there's a lovely picture with four smiley people, Anna O'Brien, the chairman, Steve Randall, the presenter, Nigel Dallard and Paul Blitz, trustees, and they look as if they're really enjoying being part of this enterprise.
Veteran buses set for outing. The organisation Friends of King Alfred's Buses has confirmed the details of this year's running day, with routes set in and around Winchester. Around 10 of the company's traditional vehicles, ranging in age from 88 years to 49 years, will be creating the old days on Bank Holiday Monday, May the 6th. Free bus services will operate from Winchester Broadway and the Cattle Market car park off Worthy Road between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m, covering most of the traditional King Alfred routes, as well as those of neighbouring historic companies such as the Aldershot and District and Hampshire and Dorset. King Alfred buses primarily operated in the city, suburbs and nearby villages. One of the last independently owned bus companies, it folded in 1973. Friends of King Alfred Buses chairman, James Freeman, said, "It's time once again to give our many friends and supporters a chance to relive the best years of the King Alfred buses and coaches. Come with us to experience what it was like to ride on them and their contemporaries. We've again chosen to take advantage of the May Day bank holiday on May the 6th, which we believe will be very popular." The Transport Bazaar will also return to Winchester Guildhall, opening between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m, and there will be a static display of historic vehicles at the cattle market.
Unveiling of model of proposed statue. A model of a proposed statue of a Jewish medieval businesswoman will be unveiled on Thursday. Councillor Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, will unveil the maquette of the statue of Licoricea at the Art Workers Guild in London. It has been created by internationally renowned sculptor Ian Rank Broadley, FRSS. The unveiling of the maquette will mark the full launch of the Licoricea of Winchester statue appeal, led by its patron Simon Sebag Montefiore, historian, television presenter and author. The plan is to place the statue outside the Discovery Centre on Jewry Street, the heart of the medieval Jewish community.
Health chiefs boost continuity of care for mums. Pregnant women are to see changes being made by the region's community midwifery team. From Monday, Hampshire hospitals will have teams of midwives dedicated to working with women who choose to have either a home birth or to give birth at the Trust's midwife-led maternity centre at Andover War Memorial Hospital. The teams will help to ensure the same midwife supports each woman from the early stages of pregnancy through to birth and also in their first few days as a new mum. Both the home birth and maternity centre teams will hold monthly events where women can meet all of the midwives who could support them when they are in labour, ensuring that they are cared for by a familiar face. Maxine Ellis, clinical midwifery matron at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Working with the same midwife throughout a pregnancy and then labour has been shown to have a really positive effect. And making these changes to the way we work will enable us to make sure that we can make this happen for even more women."
Daffodil picking riles social media. A woman has sparked anger on social media after she was allegedly spotted picking daffodils from a roadside bank. This antisocial behaviour on Alresford Road was caught on camera by Facebook user Laura Ann Lowe, who uploaded the pictures to Winchester Rants, a group page for residents to talk about local issues. Alongside the photo, she posted, "People wonder why we have no flowers on Alresford Road. Well, this is why. This woman thinks she owns the flowers when they're council-owned. Hope you get caught." Her upload met with mixed responses, with some commenters asking why others are, quotes, "moaning about someone just picking flowers," and one replying, "I admit to picking a few myself back in the day." Local City Councillor Rose Burns, a criminal lawyer, said, "The show of sunny, yellow daffodils at this spot is eagerly awaited every spring. What a shame she decided to appropriate the blooms for herself rather than leave them for everyone else to enjoy. However, had she been caught in the act by a policeman, she might have found herself on the wrong side of the law. Flowers growing in council parks are legally off limits." And that's accompanied by a rather blurry photograph of a lady who indeed is bending down at the roadside and appears to be picking some daffodils.
City Centre cycling races set to return. One of the South's biggest cycling events returns to Winchester this summer. Winchester Criterium and Cycle Fest 2019, now in its seventh year, will attract cyclists from across the region for a mix of cycling-related activities and high-speed races, supported again by Hargroves Cycles. The Criterium races are highly regarded by riders and fans, with many travelling from across the UK to attend the event, which takes place on a 1 kilometre circuit in the heart of Winchester city centre on Sunday, June the 9th. Entries are now open for those wishing to race in the Criterium, with categories ranging from juniors to elite. To apply for places, go to winchestercriterium.org. Andy Hargroves from Hargroves Cycles said, "This event has become increasingly popular each year and is now a widely recognised event by riders from across the UK. We feel privileged to be a part of this fantastic event, and the Criterium provides us with an opportunity to engage with children and families across the district to promote such an exciting sport. The event will be filled with exciting activities for everyone, including a family cycle ride prior to the races. The Winchester Criterium and Cycle Fest Facebook page will provide sneak previews of what will be on offer ahead of the event. The race incorporates the South Region Circuit Race Championships within the under 16 and senior races. Riders start at the top of the High Street on the pedestrian precinct, turn left onto St Thomas's Street, wind their way past the cathedral, past the city council offices, and turn left from Colebrook Street for the long uphill drag to the start and finish line. And that's accompanied by a lovely photograph of some of the youngsters wearing such colourful cycling gear with their helmets on, bent over their handlebars, furiously pedalling away and looking determined to win.
MP raises concern over incinerator. Winchester's MP has raised concerns about plans for a new incinerator just outside of the district during a debate in the House of Commons. Steve Brine, MP, criticised the Wheelabrator plan for the facility at Barton Stacey, which has been described by campaigners as nearly the same size as Battersea Power Station and absolutely ridiculous, as MPs were discussing the regulation of the incineration of waste. As previously reported, more than 2,500 people have signed a petition against the plans, which will be decided by the Secretary of State, Greg Clark, and would see it built on just over a mile west of Bullington Cross. The business claims the facility will be able to process 450,000 tonnes of waste a year, which will power around 110,000 homes. Mr. Brine spoke out against the planned development, which, while in the constituency of neighbouring MP for Romsey Caroline Noakes, has caused widespread concern among his own constituents living in the villages across Wanston and Mitchell-Dever. Mr. Brine said, "Given that incineration is not recycling and the proposals would lead to countless lorry movements just to feed the machine, it would be good to hear from the minister about where the government see incineration in the hierarchy of waste management." As previously reported, residents have formed the Keep Test Valley Beautiful Action Group against the facility that could be seen from up to 18 miles away when built. Andy Jolliffe, a resident from Long Parish who is spearheading the campaign, said, "It's really difficult to appreciate the sheer scale of what's being planned. Hampshire already has three waste stations, and if it was necessary to build another this big, why in the countryside? If approved, construction is expected to begin next March."
A31 Lorry Park. The county's transport chief has said it was prudent to install a lorry park in preparation for a no-deal Brexit. It comes as Hampshire County Council's Cabinet discussed a report outlining a potential cost of more than £1 million should the lorry park be used. As previously reported in the Hampshire Chronicle, the 5-kilometre A31 lorry park between the Percy Hobbs roundabout near Winchester and the Ladycroft roundabout near Arlesford would hold between 200 and 300 lorries along the southbound carriageway in the event of delays at Portsmouth Port caused by a no-deal Brexit. The report revealed, should full implementation of the A31 plan be required, the total cost, including triage services and 6 weeks of running costs, would be an estimated £1 million. It adds that should the lorry park be needed beyond an initial 6 weeks, the, quotes, additional running costs would be an estimated £70,000 a week. Although it did point out that the council said it would seek reimbursement for the costs from local government. Speaking at the council meeting on Monday, Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport, said, "They certainly won't be abortive works. They could be used either if we need in future to resurface them or other emergencies. We can utilise them for traffic management. But we thought it was prudent to put this in place, and I think Hampshire has acted in a very responsible way in doing it." Council leader Councillor Roy Perry said the hope is that the lorry park will never be needed. He added, We wish the government every success in trying to sort it out, but we're not certain, and that's why work's been done. As previously reported, the lorry park works caused anger among residents due to the short warning given, but were completed ahead of schedule after being ordered by the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Local Resilience Forum, a group that works to prepare for emergencies, who identified a high risk of significant traffic congestion due to delays at Portsmouth International Port in the event of a no-deal Brexit.
Guides raise £900 for cancer charity. First Kingsworthy Guides have been busy this term raising money for Wessex Cancer Trust. In January, each of the 30 girls in the unit were given £1 by their leaders and challenged to make their money grow. Girls voted to choose a cancer charity to receive the funds, as a number of people in the unit had been touched by cancer in the last year. Girls started to grow their money in different ways, from afternoon teas or car washing to selling items they no longer wanted or making paper flowers. Each girl chose a different way of building up their money. Orla, 13, made chocolate lollipops around Valentine's Day and sold them in school, at Guides and at her dad's workplace, raising a whopping £180. The money has been counted and the girls discovered they had raised a staggering £900. Leader Isabel Haig said, "It is an extraordinary amount of money that these 30 girls have raised. It just goes to show what young women can do." And that's accompanied by a lovely picture of the guides smiling, looking very happy and surprised at the huge amount of money their hard work has raised.
Concerns over parking plan at £150 million scheme. Winchester Heritage Watchdogs have raised concerns about aspects of the £150 million station approach redevelopment. The City of Winchester Trust has identified problems with the scheme to develop the area between Station Hill and Sussex Street. The City Council proposes a major development of offices along with parking, some shops and cafe and restaurants. In the latest newsletter, Trust Chairman Keith Lehman said, "There are many very positive ideas, for example, the decision to keep the ex-registry office, the many active ground floor frontages, the way in which the buildings are designed to use the contours, etc. However, there are also questions concerning the car parking, particularly when considered against the movement study document, which is proposing that car movement in central Winchester should be reduced. With the provision of 135 car park spaces, this proposal does not appear to follow the recommendations suggested in the movement study document, that is, to reduce traffic movement. We also consider the height of the buildings, a long station approach, need verifiable views so that the heights of buildings can be understood." Mr. Lehman added, "Routes to and from the city centre, enhanced by recognising the need to link the station with the city centre, even though implementation is likely to be spread over a number of years."
Now here's an item which relates directly to that one just read to us by Frieda. It's about station approach and it's headed, "What Lies Below is on the Agenda." The buried history underneath the station approach site has been discussed between archaeologists and local people. Plans for station approach adjacent to the Winchester train station include Grade A office space along with shops, restaurants and cafes to create a vibrant new gateway to the city. More than 20 people attended this event hosted at Winchester City Council, including representatives from Hampshire Cultural Trust, Winchester University, HCC Historic Environment, the City of Winchester Trust, Hampshire Field Club and Winchester Archaeology Rescue Group. The expert panel included Richard Greatorex from Cotswold Archaeology, Paul Bennett of the Canterbury Archaeology Trust, and Tracy Matthews, archaeologist at Winchester City Council, along with Chris Bradfield, strategic director, and Ian Chari, head of programme at Winchester City Council. Councillor Steve Miller, chairman of the Cabinet Committee, said, "Plans for the station approach area are at a critical stage, and the archaeology at the site presents a very exciting opportunity for the city. We will ensure there are lots of opportunities for interested residents and organisations to see and learn from the extensive history that the site contains." Paul Bennett, director at the Canterbury Archaeological Trust, added, "This event hosted by Winchester City Council today has been very proactive and positive. Not many local authorities undertake this type of engagement so early in the planning and development process, and the council should be congratulated for doing so. The station approach site has been extensively studied and contains archaeological items from the Iron Age through to Roman times and the medieval period. Further archaeological works are expected to take place in 2020 and will be completed by early 2021. And that's accompanied by a photograph, which must be amongst the most boring photographs you'll ever see, of some people sitting at a long table surrounded by some other people sitting on chairs.
Tributes to founder of Writers' Event. Barbara Large, founder in the 1980s of the Winchester Writers' Festival, has died after a long illness. Mrs. Large of Main Road, Otterbourne, was awarded the MBE for her groundbreaking work in establishing events that aim to help aspiring writers. Many people who knew her have been paying tribute. Alison Symes on the Chandler's For Today website said, "She will be much missed by many writers. Barbara's gift was the knack of knowing how to encourage writers. As for her drive in getting the Winchester Writers' Conference, as it was first known, up and running, and then keeping it going for so many years, that was simply incredible." The festival steadily grew, and its competitions attracted entries from around the world. Mrs. Large was director for 34 years before retiring in 2014. The university website said, "Her death leaves a space in the world that will be filled in time with good memories and much gratitude for a unique lady."
Widow's Walk for Hospice Appeal. A widow is set to walk nearly 200 miles to raise funds for the Winchester Hospice Appeal. Lynn Whittaker began her trip from Cumbria to North Yorkshire on April the 10th, in memory of her late husband, Michael Cox, who died in 2014 from cancer, aged 62. The 60-year-old Lynn, who is travelling alone, hopes to complete the 188-mile journey in 13 days and will stay overnight in bed and breakfasts along the way. She said, "There is currently no hospice in Winchester, and when Michael was ill, we had to travel all the way to Basingstoke to access palliative care. Hospices can make a huge difference to patients and their families at a difficult time, and this new facility in the city will make a huge difference to the local community." Lynn's fundraising campaign has already raised around £6,000, with more than 110 people donating to her online Just Giving page. There's a lovely photograph of Lynn with her husband Michael looking so happy, and I personally feel that this is a marvellous way of grief therapy which Lynn has embarked upon.
Gin Company with a nose for growth. A popular gin distillery that started in a Winchester man's kitchen has revealed ambitious plans for expansion after gaining international interest. Winchester Distillery will now offer business equity through UK crowdfunding platform Crowdcube in hopes to expand its current production facility in Aylesford. Founder Paul Bowler revealed his ambitions at a launch event in the company's Middlebrook Street building, the Blend Academy, last Thursday. He said, "We intend to upgrade the current space amongst the watercress beds so that we can host more visitors for tours and tastings and open a gift shop. We'd made more and more profits each year, which had been invested back into the business to help it grow. It could contently carry along the way it is, but to progress, we need more investment. He added, "It's got to the point that the products are wanted abroad, and I'm hoping to introduce new product lines like rum and whiskey, because although the gin boom keeps expanding each year, one day that will plateau, and business is all about growth." Paul traded his London-based IT career of 20 years to make and sell his own gin in 2014. His first product, Twisted Nose Dry Gin, was made at home in Upper Brook Street, but was quickly taken up by well-known local places, including the Hotel du Vin and the Green Man. Paul said, "I was travelling on the train to work one day and I read an article about a gin distillery in London. I thought, I like gin. So I set myself a goal of 9 months to get everything in place. I made some terrible batches at first, but I kept at it and I haven't looked back since." The company now plans to install larger stills. Currently, those in place can hold up to 500 litres, but Paul is looking at new machinery with twice that capacity. He said, "I used to make around 50 bottles a week, but now over 1,000 are labelled and sent off. Our products will still have the same authentic craft feeling to them. We're all about Hampshire honesty and will continue to look out for local businesses."
Approval for expansion to Trinity Centre. Trinity Winchester has welcomed planning permission for its Under One Roof project to build an extension of 11 self-contained flats. The £1.47 million project will provide safe housing alongside Trinity's support services to help people move on to independent living. Winchester-based architects, Hyphen, have drawn up plans for the development, which will include communal facilities and a therapy room at its base on Durngate. With support from Winchester City Council and other county-wide stakeholders, the development will be financially sustainable, with running costs met through housing benefit and additional services. The project is based on housing first principles, a proven model of success evolving from Finland, the USA and Scotland. Sue McKenna, Trinity Chief Executive, said, "It has long been Trinity's ambition to provide homes for our clients with a holistic approach, which will offer long-term benefits with life-changing outcomes. The Under One Roof project, when opened, will have an immediate impact on reducing the number of rough sleepers in the Winchester district. It will also improve their health and long-term prospects." Following a gift of £500,000 from the Deflog VQ Trust and considering other donations and reserves, Trinity still needs to raise £910,000 this year to be able to complete the project by the end of 2020. The scheme was largely uncontroversial, with only two objections from local people. And there's an illustration of the proposed extension. It says it will extend into the garden at Trinity's Durngate base. It looks very Scandinavian, with a flat roof and wooden cladding. And it really looks very nice indeed.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye now.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet provided. And when you put your label in your wallet, please ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.